is the United States Dressage Federation's official podcast. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Chris Stafford, and on this week's episode, we'll have winners of the USDF Service Awards, and we'll find out more about American dressage legend Liz Searle. We'll have some tips from Lilo 4 on lateral work, and we'll bring you part two of our series on the mind-body connection from Sandy Veneman. As usual, we would like to remind you that the views of the host and guests of this podcast do not necessarily reflect the views of the US Dressage Federation or its members. And we begin with some news this week that the US Dressage Federation has announced that Lois Heyerdahl and Winnie Heine Duncan will be recognized as USDF Members of Distinction at the Salute Gala and Annual Awards Banquet on December 2nd during the 2017 Adequan USDF Annual Convention. The USDF Member of Distinction Award is a prestigious national award that annually recognizes USDF members who have demonstrated exceptional commitment to his or her local area or region. Lois Heyerdahl was a US Equestrian Federation senior dressage judge and trained seven horses to Grand Prix. As a founding member of the Wisconsin Dressage and Combined Training Association, Lewis's determination to promote dressage was demonstrated every day, and she remained a USDF member up to the year of her passing in 2012. Winnie Heine Duncan has been an asset to her local dressage community and to the mission and values of the USDF for over 30 years. Winnie is an active member of the Oregon Dressage Society, having served as an officer and board member, and was one of the founding members of the Cascade Combined Training Club. Lilo 4 will also be inducted into the Roma Foundation USDF Hall of Fame at the Salute Gala and Annual Awards Banquet. Induction into the Hall of Fame is an honor bestowed on individuals and horses that have made outstanding contributions to dressage in the United States. Lilo held the FEI judge status as a three-star para-equestrian judge and five-star dressage and young horse judge until her FEI retirement in 2016. She is currently a USEF senior judge for dressage and young horse and registered dressage sport horse breeding judge. Lilo's involvement with the USDF and USEF has proven instrumental in the development and promotion of dressage education in the United States. She has served as the presenter for multiple USDF events, including the 2017 Adequan USDF FEI Level Trainers Conference. Lilo was a founding member of the USDF Instructor Trainer Program and still serves as an examiner and instructor, along with being co-chair for the committee. USDF President George Williams said, "The USDF is pleased to recognize Lilo with this honor. Her boundless energy, enthusiasm, and lifelong dedication to dressage have made her a force within the world of dressage. Lilo's impact is far-reaching and involves many aspects of our sport." You can find out more information about the USDF Member of Distinction Award and the Roma Foundation USDF Hall of Fame by visiting the website at usdf.org and following the link to the awards. And now, in Lilo's honor, we have a selection of her tips from the 2017 Adequan USDF FEI Level Trainers Conference.
I sometimes switch a little bit between, you know, so that we don't throw a shoulder in for 60 meters. It's very hard to keep balance for 60 meters in the same track. It's just like us having to walk 60 meters, and if you would measure your strides for those 60 meters, you would be amazed how often your stride would change, you know, and we expect the horses to be staying in the absolute same tempo, the same balance, the same beat, the same carriage, and, you know, for 60 meters. So that's tough. So, you know, but for schooling, you know, what I sometimes do is maybe do some interrupting of that. So like a little bit of a shoulder in, then a little lengthening straight ahead, then a little back to the shoulder in. So, you know, kind of like a little tiny bit variation. We're using the movement at times for plain simple training purposes. And then the next time we, of course, we wanted the ultimate to be the show figure. but we're also using it to improve other things. So, you know, now moving them a little bit from that leg, you know, toward the center line, maybe gives the rider also a little bit more of a control of the straightness of the horse, but still able to also then go, for instance, toward the center line, and then maybe do a shoulder in right, going toward C, just in a very slight position. You leave it at that. Then when you do go back to the shoulder in on the long side, you know, you could even maybe once in a while do a transition within. So keep the shoulder in or walk. Just keep the walk in the shoulder in until you feel him being up in the contact, and then you trot off again in the shoulder in. And then you walk again, but walk forward to the shoulder in. And then you trot on in the shoulder in. And that, if you think that's easy, you're mistaken. It's very difficult. You know, your leg has to be right, the balance of the horse. And again, and always making sure you don't take the horse's frame back. You know, you want the frame to go ahead. You know, I sometimes even use the shoulder in on a diagonal line a little bit to train the horse to do a better, say, position for half passes. You know, so that the learning never to fall, in my opinion, over the inner leg, which then makes the rider want to use the inner rein, the balance, and then, of course, the horse falls down. So, but if you would think about the diagonal being your wall, and you would do a shoulder in on that wall, you know, then the horse will learn to stay with the shoulders upward, forward thinking, and then you could straighten them on the diagonal and say, okay, we lengthen a few steps. And then we go the other direction. And we do, again, say maybe a half a diagonal line, just a shoulder in on the diagonal line, and then straighten them out, go to okay, lengthen. And the next time you do a half a shoulder in, and then you do the other half a half pass. You know, so you can use the movement of the shoulder in to train your horse in many things. So it's a tool in some ways, but it's also a very suppling exercise, an engaging exercise. I always say a circle and the shoulder in is the mother of all your lateral movements. If you ride that well, most of your rest of the movements will come out much more simple. You know, everything is related to uphill forward balance. You know, it's not just the head which has to come up, it's the shoulders and the forearm being lifted by the engaging of the hind leg from the seat and the leg forward. If you really want to teach the horse maybe a very little more bending around that inner leg, traverse is an awesome exercise. Because you want to feel like you can bend the horse, and really the only place the spine was bendable was exactly where you're sitting. So it's more we turn the neck away from that horse, that part, that place is not so bendable. So, you know, because then the shoulders fall out, and really the bending can only happen if also the horse in a certain way stays a little more straight in front of you. So that the curvature is very general, all the way from ear to tail, and then you can, you know, maybe position the frame a little bit more in certain movements, but in a certain way you always want to keep the base of the neck really kind of where the shoulders are. And then you can flex a little, turn a slightly bit, but then the engine of the hind legs will always travel with the shoulders up. We never want to stifle the inside hind leg in anything, really, because this is the leg which carries the rider's inside weight, forward and out. And also, in my opinion, the inner leg is also responsible for a little bit the lift of the shoulder going out. The outside leg is the controlling leg, and also the engine a little bit to make the horse go forward. So, you know, one has to always kind of let those aids play for you, you know. Sometimes you maybe use a little more inner leg, the next time a slightly bit more outer leg, and the next time you do both together the same way. But, you know, we have to allow, you know, the movement and the horse in that reaction to tell us what helpful aids of ours he needs to be able to be successful. You know, I think the work on the square is all, you know, is a very important part. Just to control the square, making sure, of course, when you're turning that the hunches don't turn in advance. Because sometimes if the hunches are already in by the turn, then the front end has no chance to turn. What you do with the square, you want to make yourself think about that you're riding just a really straight horse, and the only thing you're really thinking of when you're turning is that the turn is mainly done by the shoulders. So, you know, I started always from the walk. I always did my quarter turn on the end in the walk first, so the horse knows it. You have to really let your eyes work your magic. If you're looking down at your horse while you're doing something, your horse will stop because of your eyes. Your eyes go forward. So make your eyes be your goal to go forward. Look ahead of your horse. You don't even make such a big deal out of it. Because what happens is the riders try so hard, and then they do all this stuff, and really it's not necessary. So you just walk, and you say flexion, and you go, and you go out. You don't make such a big deal, okay? It's not a big deal. What I was always being taught was, a little bit, is that when you come from a half pass and then you do your zigzags, a very, very little moment, that old outside leg, which now then becomes the new inside, of course, that leg has to try to tell the horse to step into your new outside aids. But you cannot collapse on the right before the horse already changes. You know, you have to really focus on a little bit more standing upright, getting the horse from that side into your change, and then you say, we're standing upward, going to where we want to go. And now, again, it's not the movement itself which is always the problem. It is really our understanding of how to prepare. I call it dissecting my movement. You know, so first now, because of the horse running a little to the side or wanting to do it on its own, you know, I would just do one leg, and then the next moment I would say, okay, the next movement will be me riding your canter circle and just half pass to the corner and then do the change. And then you put that movement back together as a unit. And you could do just maybe the center line cantering from A, and then you just start the half pass at X. So that the horse really learns that, you see, now if you canter straight on the center line and then you half pass to the corner, you probably will be much more in control of your horse's inside. What he has to learn is to wait for you. You know, but you worked a little bit on the quality and you half pass, then you worked a little on the quality of your change, you worked on the quality that he waits for you, and then you work on the quality of the other one, and then you make a package out of it.
Elizabeth Liz Searle was made a Lifetime Achievement winner in 2002. Liz served as USDF Vice President from 1989 to 1996. She was an outstanding chairman of the Judges Committee from 1983 to 2001 and introduced freestyle, quadrille and pas de deux into dressage competitions in the US. She was prominent on the West Coast as an organizer of dressage shows, clinics, and seminars. She served as a member of the USDF L Program faculty. Liz was also instrumental in the formation of the California Dressage Society, USDF's largest group membership organization. And now, in our education segment, we have part two of the series on mind games with Sandy Veneman, PhD. We learn how to up our mental game and improve partnership and performance through simple, proven psychological techniques, including cognitive reprogramming and counter conditioning. This week, Sandy focuses on self-talk. The series was first recorded at the 2016 Adequan USDF Annual Convention.
So there's some kind of simple techniques in psychology, and they sound stupid. And so one of the things you have to be able to do in these sort of things is be open-minded about things and just go, you know, this sounds really stupid, but I'll try it. So if you try things and then they work, you'd be more likely to do them in the future. So the simplest thing that you can do to stop that cycle is this thing called thought stopping. So a lot of us, we think about things in the future, okay? So I thought about things coming here. It's like, my computer doesn't work. Back it up on this little thing. If this little thing doesn't work, I'm going to email it to the education chair at USDF. So those are pretty constructive ways to deal with future events, but most of us don't do that sort of thing. We do kind of worrying instead. So if I just went, oh gosh, I'm afraid my program's not going to work at the USDF convention and I didn't do anything about it, that would just be like non-constructive worrying. So if you're worried that your horse is going to freak out, it's not going to make it less likely to happen. What is it going to do? Yeah, it's going to make it more likely to happen. So with thought stopping, things are going to pop in your head. So if we tell people, don't think about a polar bear, What are y'all going to think about? A polar bear. So you can't just say, oh, I'm not going to think about my horse freaking out, because then you're just going to think about your horse freaking out. So you have to practice. So what we like to do is just visualize a stop sign, stop. And then you have to have something else to think about, or else you're going to go back to thinking about your horse freaking out, or you're going to go back to the polar bear or whatever. All right, so you have to have something that you are going to think about every time these obtrusive thoughts come into your brain. And it should be something positive. So it's like, I'm going to sit up and be elegant. The only time I ever feel attractive, I used to actually be kind of attractive a long time ago. So the only time, even back then, that I felt okay about myself was when I was on a horse, because I could be beautiful and elegant and tall on a horse. So beautiful, elegant, tall. And when I think that, where do my shoulders go? They go back. Because if you're elegant and tall, like if you're wearing a very fancy dress to a very fancy party, beautiful and elegant is up and open. Another reason why, if you get scared on your horse, you don't do the beautiful, elegant, up and open, is because we try to get in the fetal position. And the fetal position kind of makes you like roll off the front of your horse. It's like the perfect way to do that. So stop, and then you have something pre-programmed to go in your mind in place of that. Mine is beautiful and elegant. And so I do it often enough that I actually just go ahead and change my body position then. But it can be whatever's good for you. But you have to figure out something to start talking to yourself internally about that is not freaking you out. How many times will you have to do that? As many times as necessary. So I loved listen to an Olympic rider one time, and somebody asked, well, how often do you make a correction? And she said, oh, like, you know, 50 times down the long side. Well, that's why it looks so beautiful, because before the mistake actually shows, she's already corrected it. So the answer to everything is, how often do you have to do this? As often as you need to. Okay, so once you're actually there and something has gone wrong, we need to think about possibilities and not what just went wrong, okay? Because it can be a self-fulfilling prophecy. You don't want to end up with a self-fulfilling prophecy that if you expect something to happen, it actually is going to. So what everybody knows who's ever fox hunted is, if there's a hole, you don't look at it because your horse is going to fall in the hole. Or if you work with riders, I never say to them, now, you don't want to do this when you go into the ring, even though I'm thinking that, okay? So instead of saying, I don't want you to just careen around the corner to get up the center line, I say, remember, we're going to use a really nice half a 10-meter circle to get up the center line, all right? Because if you say to somebody before they go in, don't careen up the center line, what are they going to be thinking about? Careen up the center line, and they will do that. So I do enjoy listening to people who are trainers talk to their riders and tell them what not to do, because that's doesn't work so well. So I never go over possible mistakes with riders. That's what you work on at home. You can work on mistakes, little mistakes in the warm-up ring, but you don't want to do that right before you're going to compete. All right. So you need to acknowledge that you have self-imposed limitations. Most of us, we put them on ourselves. All right, so what we have to kind of do is get a cognitive mindset that you can be successful at your desired behavior. So if you haven't necessarily had a lot of success in your life, it's okay, this can be your first. So you have to first of all have a belief that you can succeed at this job. And what you would call that state confidence, if you experience that just today. Some people think that you can be a self-confident person over the long haul because you were kind of born with that. That would be trait self-confidence. But I'm a believer that basically you can make that happen. So up until 10th grade, I was scared to death of people. Can you tell I'm really shy? Most people who meet me don't think I'm shy. I'm really shy. Really, honest to God, I am. I'm very shy. I used to walk around at school, and I lived here in St. Louis, so it was cold. I had this big old coat that kind of looked like a bear, and I would kind of try to hide in my coat, and I would slip into my classrooms, and I would sit at my desk, and I wouldn't look at people. And when I was going to go from the junior high to the senior high, I finally said to myself, you are just pathetic. I don't have necessarily very kind self-talk to myself, but I didn't have a PhD in psych at that point. So I'm like, this is horrible. This is not working so well. Why don't I become Donna Dickherber? So Donna Dickherber was a person I knew, and she was great. She was bubbly. She loved everybody. Everybody loved Donna Dickherber. Okay? It's like all the boys wanted to date Donna Dickherber. And she's not a gorgeous beauty. She was a pretty darn average-looking person. But everybody loved her because she loved everybody else. So I thought, okay, I'm going to be Donna Dickherber. I'm going to the senior high school. What would Donna Dickherber do? She'd probably walk in the classroom and say hello to somebody. And so I started walking in the classroom, saying hello to somebody. I didn't hide behind my coat. I would actually, you know, like sit up, and there were people around me, you know, all sorts of things that hadn't happened before. And it was so terribly uncomfortable. And I felt like an absolute fake. And I felt that way for years and years. And now I don't have any problem walking in and talking to people. So you would like to have self-confidence in what you want to do. And there's an optimal level of self-confidence. So you don't want to be overly confident, which means you didn't bother to ride your horse all week and you think you're going to do well at the show. That would be overconfident. Underconfident would mean you're prepared, you've done this before, you're showing at a level lower than what you're training at home. That would be kind of like the optimum level of confidence that you've got going. And this works for everybody, okay? So from people intro up to Grand Prix. So it's a mind thing. The mind thing can help everything else. So what you want to do is cognitively reprogram how you think. So the first thing is you have to recognize this negative self-chatter that you have, these things that you tell yourself. And so one of the things that you can tell yourself is like, oh my God, all these riders out here are so good. It's like, oh my God, they're so good. Well, they're not going to be in the ring with you, right? No, they're not going to be in the ring with you. So it's not like a head-to-head competition. You're not doing, you know, walk, trot, equitation anymore. You're in there by yourself. It doesn't matter if everybody else is wonderful. If they're really wonderful, they're probably not going to run into you in the warm-up. That's good. Okay? So we would like to go ahead and then change some of these scripts that are negative into positive ones. Okay, so on the left-hand side of the paper, you would like to write down some of the self-talk that you have currently. Just jot down a few things. Negative self-talk. Mine would be something like, this is a show where my horse freaked out last week. I hope she doesn't like do the half pass in the middle of that training level test again. And then on the right side, we're going to rewrite that into something more positive. All right. So the example that I have is, this is a real common thing for riders. They'll say to themselves, you idiot, how could you miss that movement? I mean, you idiot, how could I miss that? Instead, it would probably be better to go, hey, there's two of those in this test. I'm going to do better on the second one, all right? If you mess up the second one, it's like, oh, there's a whole lot more list on that test. I'm going to do really well on that free walk. Or it's always, you can practice this at home. Did you know that the halts are worth 20 points? I'm going to jam on that halt, okay? Oh, here's another one people think. It's like, that was a terrible pirouette. The judge must think I'm nuts to try this test. And I have to tell you this. I guess there's some people that aren't very nice out there. I saw some stuff on the internet. Ugh. Anyway, I think that the majority of horse people are very nice and kind. And when we see somebody do something in the ring, we go, oh God, that happened to me. I just feel so bad for them. I think for the most of us, we really root for everybody. And for the most part, I think the judges root for us. There is no physiological difference between being excited and afraid. It's one chemical called epinephrine. And so you can literally recognitively frame that. When you have epinephrine flowing through your veins, if you're like with somebody the opposite sex, most women attribute it to being excited and being in love. And most men contribute it to being scared out of their minds. Okay, so it's just how you label that particular internal feeling you have. So can you think about relabeling that I'm excited? Because excited is a positive thing. Who else wants to volunteer? Okay, so she says, I cannot do a left pirouette. Oh, she cannot do a left canter half pass. It's her throwaway movement. So as soon as she says she can't do it, your body's going to say, I can't do this, particularly it's your throwaway movement. You probably just like, and it will decrease your chance to do that. So what I would rewrite that is, I am going to improve on my left canter half pass and do the best I can do. Okay, it sounds stupid, but literally it changes your life. Or perhaps like you can keep the bend for a couple strides as opposed to zero. And then each time if you did that couple strides that you didn't before, that is a success. Okay, we can't be perfect. Nobody's perfect. But build on that success instead. I would never label anything a throwaway movement. You can never learn to move those haunches in or out. Is that right? Okay, well, saying never is a bad thing. So you can say, this is a challenge to learn to move those haunches in and out. And one of the things that you can do, which is what's nice, there are people who are trainers and instructors that can help you. And so a good idea is to try to work with somebody. I find a lot of my people that I work with, their horses won't do a movement because their body's in the wrong position. And so the horse can do it, and once we put them in the right place, it's like magic, something starts to happen. So instead of saying I can't, I find it challenging, okay? Because a challenge is something you can live up to. All right, so you can work on that. It's really hard because most of us are pretty mean to ourselves. So you might have to work on that.
And finally, do you know someone who deserves national recognition for their outstanding service to the sport? The USDF Volunteer of the Year and USDF Youth Volunteer of the Year awards recognize USDF members who, through consistent and cumulative volunteer activities, have demonstrated exceptional commitment towards carrying out the USDF's mission. Any USDF member may nominate a youth or adult for these awards, but nominations must be submitted by August 31st. For further information, please visit the Awards tab on the USDF homepage. And that's it for this week's episode. Don't forget you can find more educational information and resources at eTrack. Just go to the website at usdf.org and following the link to eTrack. This podcast can be downloaded from the iTunes podcast store to any podcast app, so you can listen to the show anywhere. And the best part about it is it's free. To find out when the next episode of this podcast is live, follow us on social media on Facebook and Twitter. Until the next time, thank you for listening wherever you are in the world. And remember, the USDF is your connection to the American dressage community.